Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Rugby could be on the verge of a major earthquake, being compared to that caused by LIV Golf. Organisers of a breakaway tournament, which is called R360, they've signed a deal with YouTube. They're hoping to lure star players from across the northern and southern hemispheres. And meanwhile, following a fairly shocking run of results, Welsh Rugby is considering restructuring its club game from four clubs down to two, sparking a backlash from fans and dire warnings that this could kill the game in Wales. Well, to unpack all of this, I'm joined in the studio by former Irish international turned coach and commentator Bernard Jackman, and Welsh Rugby expert and author Simon Thomas joins us on the line, and you're both welcome. Now, Bernard, before we start, I just want to ask you about the Irish women's team. Very comprehensive victory over Japan, the opening World Cup game yesterday. Gives us great hope, doesn't it, for the team?
Really good performance. They really built on the improvement I think we saw in the Six Nations, particularly that England game in Cork where they were very competitive with the best team in the world for 50 minutes. And you would hope that with the pre-season, with the extra development of players, that they can go and improve another 10-15% in this tournament. And what we saw yesterday against Japan, it wasn't perfect, but it was a great start. Really clinical performance, and the skill set and the athleticism and the understanding of how to exploit space were all top notch. And we've got some really exciting players if we can create space for them. And you know, it was no surprise to see Amy Lee Costigan and Bevan Parsons on the back of some excellent backline play and scoring tries, and Stacey Flood a fullback as well. And the only area of concern was our lineout, which probably surprisingly wasn't as accurate as they would have liked. But I think the draw has been really kind to this team, Claire, in terms of Japan is a nice opening game. Spain next week is another nice game. They lost heavily to New Zealand, and then the big test in our group, which is New Zealand in 2 weeks' time. But they'll go into that, I think, with momentum and confidence, and that's where you want to be.
Yeah, and a great front page picture in the Independent of Eve Higgins diving to score the try. She looks as though she's mid-flight there in that picture. Now, let's talk about this new tournament, R360. I've been hearing about this over the summer because Mike Tindall is behind it, very high-profile guy. What is it?
Yeah, it's a big play. It's, I suppose, what you'd call in the business world a disruptor. They feel that this tournament will, I suppose, radically restructure professional rugby, which is broken. I think
you'll concede that.
Yeah, we'd all accept it's broken. Yeah. I think we're nearly 30 years into professional rugby, and we're still trying to find, the Goldilocks porridge, the just right. How we use our players to grow revenue, to keep existing fans on board, to be able to get new audience without overplaying our top players. And what this R360 proposes is, one, they will pay the players a lot more money. So the top 300 players in the world, male and female, will get astronomical salaries compared to what are on. At the moment, there's probably four or five players in the world who are touching €1 million roughly a year. They're saying that, you know, maybe 100 players will get €1 million a year just to play in this tournament, which is effectively what they're proposing is 16 matches in a franchise Grand Prix type global season, where they expect the players to be with them from April to June, and then from September to October. So effectively what they're trying to do is they're trying to not compete with the Six Nations, they're trying to not compete with the Rugby Championship or November International. So they're hoping that the governing bodies, the RFU, the RFU, the NZRU, etc., will agree to release these players to play in this new tournament, a Grand Prix style tournament, 16 venues all over the world. So they're talking about the Nou Camp in Barcelona, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, the Viva,
LA, and New York.
So basically like a travelling circus, by all accounts. But the problem is, when you multiply, you know, a lot of players on €1 million plus the travelling cost plus the rent of these stadiums, and also the fact is, effectively what they want is Dublin for a weekend, and there'll be six matches, all 12 teams will play. But the problem with that is, effectively, you're only filling out a stadium twice at maximum, so a Saturday and a Sunday. So realistically, your revenue from ticket sales spread across 12 teams isn't actually that much, you know. So we saw Argentina come to play the British and Irish Lions as a warm-up game. It was great. The Aviva packed out, corporate hospitality sold out, etc. But you only have to pay two teams out of that, you know, whereas now you got to pay 12. And what they're really relying on is really rich benefactors or private equity buying these franchises, and they're hoping that they can attract some Saudi money. They're hoping that they can attract, you know, American multi-billionaires, really, you'd have to be, to look at this and to get them to wear the losses for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, because I think they're inevitable. The only, like,
well, what they're saying is they can be up and running by 2026 and be profitable by 2027.
Yeah, well, look at
it. You can't see it. I can tell by your face.
I can't see it. Like, Mike Tindall is part of it, and he obviously has kudos and credibility with players and coaches, etc. The interesting guy behind the scenes here is a guy called John Lofhagen, and he has actually, you know, being part of the Indian Premier League in cricket, being involved in the background in LIV Golf. So he has...
Well, he was a lawyer for LIV Golf,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yeah, so he has. So he has, in fairness to him, he has a track record of creating a disruptive competition. Now, the difference with LIV Golf was they started with the money. You know, they started with the money
cash
behind them, whereas they've no cash really behind this group at all yet. What they have been able to do is sign up a lot of players, and I've spoken to some players who've signed up. But what they've signed up is, it's all, if we have this, if we have that, it, would you be interested in signing a contract for 1.5 million? And of course, players would accept that.
And if you sign up, are you eligible then to play in the other leagues that you mentioned and for your country?
No, this is the problem. So the agreements that the players have signed are pre-contracts, but with the guarantee that they have permission from the RFU, their home union, because the biggest ace in the pack that the unions have to keep this R360 out is the fact that they have the carrot of international rugby. Uh-huh. Right? So effectively, at the moment, what R360 are saying is you can play both, right? But the problem would be for Caelan Doris, right? So Caelan Doris signed this contract and was allowed to play for Ireland and R360. It doesn't seem like a big deal. Caelan Doris benefits, Ireland still have him. But Leinster wouldn't have him as much, right? And likewise for Antoine Dupont, Toulouse wouldn't have him as much. So when a push comes to shove and World Rugby have to make a decision on whether they effectively license this competition, I think they're going to come under massive pressure from the clubs, the provinces, and even from their own unions to say, we're losing control. And I think they'll be slow to give away control.
Okay, I'm going to come to Simon in a minute now, but like you said at the beginning there, that rugby is broken. Why is it broken? And would you not welcome something like this to try and inject a bit of cash into it?
Yeah, I think we need to look at new ways, but I think we'll talk to Simon about Wales in a second. Is effectively we have some things that are actually working. So the international game is working. World Cups do make money when they're well ran. The Lions Tour makes money, but new franchises, things that are made up that don't have history and legacy, like we've seen in so the MLR is a new league in the US. It's 4 or 5 years in existence now. It's been franchise system. Two clubs went out of business a couple of weeks ago, and maybe a third is going to fold this week. So we have struggled to grow the game in new territories, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to be better at is actually getting our costs in order and our marketing what we already have, which have history and legacy, the competitions, the teams that have history and legacy better, rather than try and go for broke and make something up completely from scratch. I think a lot of traditional rugby fans won't jump at going to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and seeing these made up teams. We have that with the Barbarians, we have that with international selections, sometimes World 15s, etc. And you'll see Twickenham, which is, you know, a huge rugby population, getting 30,000-40,000 people. The demand isn't always there to see a team of stars put together haphazardly. Generally, rugby fans up till now have followed teams they could identify with, people from their town,
province,
village,
province, here in Ireland. Yeah.
And we have, and that's obviously something that the Welsh are still trying to figure out, but in Ireland it's worked pretty well.
Okay, Simon, what's your view on it? Will people follow made-up teams?
Well, we're facing that very problem right now in Wales, just on the 360. I mean, there's two things immediately from listening to Bern that come to my mind. One is, you know, the rugby calendar is already so congested. It just seems very difficult how this is going to fit in and how it's going to impact on other competitions. You've got the Rugby Championship in the Southern Hemisphere in the summer. It seems to be a real clash there. And as Bern had said, the big issue is the international eligibility. Ireland currently really only pick players that play in Ireland, like domestic rugby. England, the same policy. You know, the irony of all this? Wales really had two players in the Lions too, so we'd probably be less affected than anyone by 360. But
which is another
statement about Welsh rugby.
Well, tell me a bit about what's happening in Welsh rugby, because it seems to be, I mean, crisis seems too small a word for it, really.
I mean, the immediate recent context is that the Wales national team lost 18 matches in a row, record ever defeat, line of defeats. So that's led to an increasing debate about change being needed, and the focus of that change has been our professional clubs. Now, the argument put out there is that we don't have enough resource, both financial and player resource, to run four competitive professional teams, you know, competitive, really pushing for honours, pushing for silverware. So proposals have been put forward. And what the Welsh Rugby Union executive, the top brass of the WRU, have come forward for is that their preference is cutting to just two professional teams from the current four. There's various ways you can do that. You could just say, right, two of the existing regions survive, two go. You could have two mergers, for example, Cardiff and Dragons in the East coming together, Scarlets and the Ospreys coming together in the West. We'll come on to that in a minute. Or the other one is you just come up with completely two new entities, brand new entities. So to put it in Irish context, it would be the equivalent of either, if you look at Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht, the equivalent would be two of those disappearing forever, two mergers with, say, Leinster, teams in the west of the country, maybe Connacht and Munster coming together, or all four of them go all together. Now, can you imagine the reaction?
Yeah,
it would be an island if you suggested that.
It wouldn't be great. You can foresee problems. And you, Bernard, worked in Wales, so you know what that might feel like and look like for rugby supporters.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the Welsh fans because I think they're starting to get very disillusioned with their governing body. And they've seen a lot of change. So the strong point of Welsh rugby was built on a very strong club game. You know, a lot of clubs, and obviously when professional came in, they decided to go for five regions. Initially, the Celtic Warriors went out of business after a while. But even for me, you know, I worked with the Dragons. The Dragons was Gwent, which is a geographical area, but I would have met a lot of resistance because we played in Newport. Newport were a lot of the Valleys clubs who theoretically fed into our region wouldn't go and associate with Newport because they were their arch rivals for 100 years or
more. So
it
just runs deep.
It runs deep, and like there's been name changes, so there was lots of, they changed the name, Dragons Rugby Club, trying to market that they were all inclusive and the old history wasn't there.
But it didn't work.
It didn't work. And I see more and more people disillusioned. Simon will have a better handle on it. But the scary thing for me, Simon, is what I've seen is the proposals, if they go to two, the WRU are only talking about a budget of, I think, 7.8 million for those two franchises, because there's going to be two professional women's teams as well. So it'll be four professional teams in total, two men, two women. But realistically, 7.8 million a budget doesn't guarantee they're going to be successful. So realistically, if this was to work, you would have to say that they would have to get instant success on the field, maybe be in the knockout stages of European Cup, etc., to start to build that. But I would say, like when I was in Wales, there was regions who were spending more than that already, and they weren't able to compete mm-hmm. with the best in Europe or the best in Ireland. So it seems, unfortunately for the WRU, that they're trying to introduce this at a time when the coffers aren't exactly loaded with money. And the only way to really build this, I think, is to throw a lot of money at it. And they're making radical change without potentially the investment to back it up. So I feel very sorry for the Welsh rugby public at the moment, because mm-hmm. I think there's a lack of clarity. There's a 90-page document released, and I looked through it. To be honest, it wouldn't have inspired confidence in me
right.
that there's absolute clarity and leadership in terms of how to go forward. But Simon, you're on the ground there. What do you think?
Well, Bernard, you spot on about the finances. They're talking about getting to 7.8 million playing budgets for these two teams. 5 years ago, the best funded teams in Wales were on more than that. So this is a lot of pain for pretty little gain when you look at the whole thing as a context of historically. The other issue for me, Bernard, is going to two teams has always been a concern for me for two reasons. because it reduces the player pool and it also reduces the opportunities and aspiration for young kids coming through. We talk so much in Wales about losing players to English colleges and schools. If you halve our number of teams, you're halving the number of opportunities, you'll see even more of that talent leaving. And I would also say, if you look at the other countries, which have a two-team system, Scotland and Italy, neither of them have won a title in the Six Nations era. Scotland last won in 1999, the last Five Nations. So it hasn't brought international success in other countries. For me, it just doesn't stack up. And I think the WRU have underestimated the scale of the backlash that has come their way, a backlash that's been exacerbated by some of the comments from the people at the top of the WRU, which give them the impression that they have pretty limited understanding of the culture of Welsh rugby.
But what do they do, Simon? You know, if they don't do this, how do they fix it?
I think there's a general recognition that it's going to be difficult for us to retain four teams, essentially four competitive teams. But personally, I'd be concerned about it going below three. My issue is I'd like a little bit more detail on the finances of this, because as recently as February and March, they were talking about putting a new system on the table where the contracts for the four existing teams getting up to about £6.5 million in 3 years' time, playing budgets. Now, how have we gone from there to now only be able to afford two teams on 7.8? The numbers don't stack up for me. Something's gone very bad. Look, I know Welsh rugby is in a very difficult financial position, but it does seem that a lot of money has disappeared off the table, and I'd like a bit more detail about exactly where it's gone or where it's going to go.
But neither of you, it seems, think that this OR360 business is going to work. Simon, is that fair?
I think the key is what Bernard said. It depends whether it gets Union and World Rugby backing. If it doesn't, if it ends up as a rebel breakaway tournament, then you're asking players to give up their international careers. And I think it's going to be hard to get any primary current internationals to do that. So that's the pivotal issue for me.
Yeah, although look what happened with LIV Golf. You know, Bernard, it started, everybody said, what is this? And then they ended up merging.
But again, the difference with LIV Golf was they started with
the money,
an open checkbook. And once you have the money, they're able to get the stars. I think the reality here is they still haven't, I haven't heard the name of one entity that are willing to buy a franchise. You know, so if they had six franchises sold with people who were locked and loaded and they could get access to the players, well, then the unions have a difficult decision to make. At the moment, all the power lies with staying with the status quo. Mm. Even though it's not perfect, I think at the moment I would be very much of the opinion that R360 won't get off the ground.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see. Thanks very much for coming in, though, Bernard Jackman there and Simon Thomas. Thanks to you.